Hello, my name is Anthea Wong and welcome to Any Adult Chit Chat Podcast. Please be sure to check out my website. It's www.aymwong.com. Thank you so much for tuning in and I hope you enjoyed my podcast today. Thank you. Bye.
Hello, everyone. My name is Anthea and welcome back to Any Adult Chit Chat. And today is a very special podcast because I'm actually curating an exhibition here in Hong Kong for the very first time. And today we have a very special guest with me. And she, how have I known Sarah for? I've known her for 3 years. I can't believe it's been 3 years. That's crazy. So I've known Sarah for 3 years. Her name is Sarah Sandran and she is a diversity and inclusion consultant in the UK in London. And yes, today is a very special podcast because it is with my exhibition that I'm curating called True 2023, or just True. And the exhibition that I'm doing in Hong Kong is mainly focusing on true identity and understanding the acceptance of who we are. And I invited UK artists to join this exhibition from different backgrounds and different creative industries. So from illustration, photography, poetry, spoken word, and even AI and AR, augmented reality. And basically, yeah, this exhibition is about how to be true. So what is true? Is it being authentic? Is it being real? But what does that even mean? So one of the aspects is obviously diversity. And, you know, this whole cliche thing of being like, oh, everyone's unique and like everyone's from different backgrounds, but it is true. That's what it is. Everyone is from a diverse background. And myself being British born Chinese, identity has always been a struggle of mine. And this is something I'd like to talk today with Sarah. And yeah, so I'm going to introduce her now. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Anthea, and hey, everyone that's listening.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining the podcast with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
No, of course. And Sarah, because she's so kindly doing this podcast, she's also sponsoring the exhibition. So thank you so much. So, Sarah, do you want to quickly just introduce yourself and then maybe quickly go into what is diversity and inclusion?
Absolutely. So, yes, I'm Sarah Chandran. I'm the founder of Fresh and Fearless, which is a consultancy that partners with organisations to help them with a more embedded diversity, equity and inclusion journey. Now, when I talk about diversity, equity and inclusion, that's essentially creating workplaces where people can thrive, you know, regardless of the background, lived experiences that they have. So if we're thinking about minoritized individuals, marginalized individuals, it's about making them feel like they can succeed and that they are valued, seen and heard in the workplace and in wider society. So yeah, that's what I do.
Lovely. And what is the name of your company that you started up?
So the name is Fresh and Fearless. And yeah, we've been operating since the beginning of 2020. And essentially when I first started out, that's when we connected, Anthea, and we worked together way back when. And
yes.
Obviously been still in touch over the last three and a half years, which feels wild. Like, I can't believe my agency has been around for that long.
Yeah, it's crazy because like I just so remember like that was during lockdown when we connected, right? And it was just before I moved to Hong Kong as well.
So, yeah, it was in the middle of lockdown, I think, and we were just I mean when I look back at the pandemic and COVID and lockdown, it feels like such a different era. It just feels so strange to think about it and that we actually went through that.
I know, yeah, but you know what? End of the day, as well, like, I always say this, things always happen for a reason. And like, you know, like what will happen if we didn't have COVID, you know, like would your business be where it is today? Or like, would I still be, where would I be? You know, things like that. Like, I always think that, yeah, things always happen for a reason. But yes, anyway, I'm glad that you're here with me. And yeah, so we're going to basically talk about as I said before, like diversity, inclusion. But I wanted to talk about this specifically because I am in Hong Kong and it's very different to the UK. As I might have mentioned previously in my podcast, and probably with you as well, Sarah, when I was working at Tate, I was a diversity champion. So when I was working there, I was in a diversity team, and you know, it was also like within a workplace as well, but also creating awareness of diversity within Tate shops. And I was responsible for like selecting products that raise awareness for diversity, doing events and things like that. And yeah, so for me, diversity has always been in our radar because, you know, I'm British born Chinese. And Sarah, do you want to explain like, yeah, your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think diversity means so many different things depending on your location and your environment, the things that you're exposed to. And diversity is such a broad word because actually it's just about understanding if there's a group of people within one room, how much variety is there in terms of people's background, people's lived experiences, you know, things when we talk about, yeah, just race and ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation and things like that, and how is everyone in the room different from one another. So that's kind of what diversity means on a kind of basic level. In terms of, yeah, how I think about diversity with regards to myself is, you know, like yourself, I am of mixed heritage and I grew up in London, and I grew up in a very diverse borough, one of the most diverse boroughs in London. But we talk about how a lot of people from ethnic minorities and minoritized backgrounds, even though we are the global majority, within certain environments, we are the minority and we are therefore oppressed and experience discrimination and inequality in huge forms. My background, particularly when it comes to my racial and ethnic identity, is that I am British. I'm born and raised in London, but my mother is Irish and she's from the Republic of Ireland. So not part of the UK, but a part of the place called Waterford in the Republic of Ireland. And then my dad is Indian, but they're Malaysian Indian. So essentially my great grandparents were, as part of the British kind of rule, they were taken from India to work in Malaysia, kind of extracting rubber from rubber trees. And so all I know is Malaysia, and that's how my Indian identity is connected there. So I don't really know much or have much connection with India itself, even though that is actually where I'm originally from. That's where my ancestry is linked with. So that's a little bit about me and my background.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, so that's the thing. So we're kind of in a way, like, because we have like a mixed background, it's there's always that idea of like, you know, fitting in, and that's the always the thing that growing up is always mine. And as I said before, this exhibition, it was mainly to like almost celebrate it as well, the fact that, you know, I do have two identities, you know, two nationalities, and I should be proud to have both. And there's always the idea of belonging as well, you know, like me never knowing if I belonged in the UK. It's like, oh, am I British enough to be British? Mm-hmm. And then like if I'm in Hong Kong, it's like, oh, am I Hong Kong, my Chinese enough to be Hong Kong, a Hong Kong person? It's always been in the middle for me. But then in the end of the day, for me, I'm very happy to have both. And this is the thing, like, I want to talk about is like, I want to educate people in Hong Kong the you know, diversity and inclusion and also like equality as well. But I feel like Hong Kong is progressing in that area anyway. But yeah, so I guess from the beginning, just very quickly, like when I first met you, you talked about how you actually wanted to start your own consultancy business because of what you went through at university, which is like the BAME issue that you went through, which I believe you said that you noticed that the BAME students weren't getting higher grades versus, white students. And I also noticed something similar, when I was working in the art industry in the gallery, the BAME demographic, were earning less, a lot less than the white employees. And obviously this is an issue. And obviously this is still an ongoing issue, I believe, in the UK, but obviously in Hong Kong, BAME is not really doesn't really exist. They obviously it'd probably be different. There will be different ethnic minorities in Hong Kong, but I feel like everyone should be treated equally. So what I really want to ask is, even in a society, like in workplace as well, but just in society in general, like what are ways and like people can really like be inclusive, and to not be there's always like this taboo against like other people that don't look like you, and you know what I mean? And I feel like in Hong Kong, like that's still kind of there. And yeah, I just basically want to know like what advice or what tips do you think you can give to people in Hong Kong?
What you just said there, in terms of that idea around belonging. Belonging is such a huge impact. It has such a huge impact in our mental health, our well-being, and generally, it's one of the most important things that we need as humans. Fundamentally, we are social beings. So the idea of feeling like we are part of a community, that we are seen and we are valued by those around us, is so important. And if you think about it in the context of the workplace, we're in the workplace the majority of our waking hours. And so if we don't have that sense of belonging there, then you can just imagine the profound impact that has on our mental health and our well-being. If we're going to spend the majority of our time in a particular, community, which is the workplace, we hope that we could create something where someone feels like they are seen for who they truly are. And not seen as different and bad, but different and good. And that difference is seen in a positive light rather than a negative way. Now, my background in diversity, equity, and inclusion started at university. I've always been a really academic person. I've loved learning. That's just my thing. I just get so much energy and buzz out of it. And I essentially knew that I wanted to work at the university, and was elected to the student union as education officer. And when that happened, I remember reflecting back on my years at university and feeling like I didn't quite fit in and things didn't feel quite right. And coming from someone who loved academia and I loved college, I loved school, I loved learning, I really struggled in my university years. And so when I was in this particular job as education officer, I remember picking up this report that looked at BAME students. And what I mean by BAME is Black, Asian, Minority, Ethnic. And essentially, BAME students were not achieving two ones or first as often as their white peers. So white people and BAME people were coming into university with the exact same grades. So they would have A levels, all of the same grades. But then something was happening whilst they were at university that meant that, Black and Asian students were kind of drifting away and getting less engagement and not getting as successful grades, despite the fact that they had the same level as their white peers. And I found this absolutely fascinating because I was like, oh my goodness, what is happening here? Because the color of someone's skin doesn't dictate their intelligence levels at all. And so what we looked at was the environment that was being created in these universities was not allowing these students to thrive. So if we think about existing within a Western world in the UK, white is the majority and then BAME is the minority. And so with that, people's names may be different. So, you've got Anthea, you've got my name. I mean, my full name is actually Sarada, but I went by Sara to make it fit easier in white speak in English speaking mouths. So some of the things that were happening at university was that lecturers weren't taking the time to learn how to correctly pronounce people's names. They would remember John, Sarah, Tim, and Bob, but when it came to names that weren't typically in English sounding, they would mispronounce it or they just wouldn't try. And then when we thought about the curriculum itself, all the materials that were being taught, all the things that were being shown and books being recommended for research, it was all so Eurocentric. And if you are somebody that is not from Europe, that isn't English or isn't, you know, white, and you're seeing all this academic material that isn't reflected with you and your background, subconsciously that has an impact, and it kind of tells you the narrative that, well, one, you don't belong here because people like you aren't succeeding within academia, which is completely incorrect. There is a wealth of research and resources out there outside of, you know, this very Western Eurocentric kind of curriculum. And it was things like that that were contributing to this varying experience within university for BME students versus white students. And I was just so passionate, and it made me think, actually, all this time I was struggling at university, I internalized it as that was me, that was something that I was doing incorrectly and I was struggling. But actually, this report was really validating to go, hey, actually, I didn't fit in because there wasn't that conscious effort to make me feel like I was part of this kind of community within the university. And that's why I struggled so much. And so that was the kind of starting point in my journey in this space. And I just always knew that I wanted to work on trying to encourage better diversity, equity and inclusion in society. And that's why I started Fresh and Fearless, and I do that with businesses now.
Yeah, that's just really fascinating, like how, yeah, so BAME or BAME like students have very similar qualifications to the white peers, and yet the grades came out so differently. I found that so interesting when you said about the names, because that's so true. Even when I was at university, we actually had a lot of international students as well. And you're totally right, like a lot of lecturers like really didn't care for trying to even pronounce the name. Even when I graduated, I even wrote the phonetic of like how to say my name, because my full name is also Anthea Yiman Wong. I have a Chinese name. And they just completely butchered my name when I graduated. Yeah, so I totally understand. I think this is the thing as well, like having just the effort being put in and the resources to really include people, you know, from all walks of life is really important. And this is the thing about as well, like I learned whilst I was at Tate as a diversity champion, is like how you should really value everyone's like strengths. Even doesn't matter like their background, you know, and it's not even like race, as you said, you know, it's, you know, your whatever you are, like your gender, your sexuality, you know, disability or whatever. I just feel like, yeah, there still needs to be a lot more work done to really have fairness and equality in society. I mean, I think we are getting there, you know, compared to like 5-6 years ago. I think, you know, there's been big steps for sure.
Just to jump in there, and I was just thinking, you know, in the context of geographically, when we think about Hong Kong and things like that, the shift is different, right? Because in England and Europe, white is the majority, and then there's everything else that is the minority, or they are more minoritized in those countries. And obviously diversity will look different for Hong Kong and for Asian countries as a whole. You know, if I was in India, my experience would have been very different. If I was in Malaysia, it would have been even very different, because I think Tamil people in Malaysia are a minoritized group. They're very marginalized, and you know, I think class and socioeconomics play a part in certain aspects like that. So when it comes to thinking about how to apply it to your own workplaces, wherever they are operating, it's trying to figure out, okay, what is the kind of dominant feature or trait that is the one that continues to succeed and thrive? And it might not necessarily always be about skin color and ethnicity. You know, we can think about diversity in the context of gender. You know, is there an overrepresentation of men versus women in particular parts of the business? You know, are there more men than women in leadership positions? That's something to think about. There's also aspects in terms of personality traits, right? I know in the UK, when we talk about extroverts and introverts, you know, extroverts are a bit more outspoken. They are a little bit more sociable, so they connect with people quite easily, whereas introverts are a little bit more reserved and they take time to kind of think about things, and then they will come forward and share. And then if they spend too much time in kind of a group environment with a lot of people, their social batteries may actually be drained much quicker than an extrovert. Or if anything, extroverts get their social battery kind of that increases from being around people. So there's very different ones, and extroverts are, you know, paraded and celebrated in the workplace compared to introverts, and that's such a challenge, because it's not that introverts aren't great at work or the businesses and the things that we're doing. It's just because they operate in a different way that isn't actually always typically valued. And so that means introverts can feel like they miss out on opportunities because they're not as outspoken. So maybe they don't get seen as frequently for a certain promotion. But extroverts, because they're always heard and always seen because they're always speaking out, they might get those opportunities more than others. So even thinking about personality traits is something to consider within the space of diversity, and things like that is really important. So, you know, it's about creating that sense of belonging for everybody. But not for them to assimilate, but to essentially be recognized for their difference and be celebrated for that.
Oh, 100%. But yeah, that's so interesting if you say that personality trait, because that is something I've noticed as well. It's like, you know, I do feel like here, as like the demographic in Hong Kong, I'm not saying like this is 100% true, but like from my personal opinion and views, I do find Hong Kong people a bit more introverted than extroverted, mm-hmm. actually, and I'm an extrovert, so I'm a loudmouth. I like to make my presence. No, but like, you know, that's totally true though, and as well, like when you're talking about, like, you know, especially, you know, in a workplace, like, well, introverts are not being really seen as like almost like not a good team player in a way, because they are seen as like reserved or quiet or whatever. But as you said, they just work differently and everyone works differently. And I find that really interesting, because I think that's something that I think maybe Hong Kong people in a workplace or even just in a general like social setting, like to understand that people are different and they operate differently. You know, and also as well, like I remember you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast as well, like even diversity, including mental health. And I know mental health in Hong Kong is definitely a big thing, but it's not being recognized for sure. I definitely know that's true. You know, mental health in Hong Kong, like, you know, working hours in Hong Kong are very long, like very like long hours. It's just in general. And, you know, there's like lack of holiday and like lack of time off and things like that. And it's like also because Hong Kong is just like so busy all the time and people are just constantly doing things, there's like no time to breathe. And I feel like a lot of youngsters as well, and old people, like, you know, people over the age of 70, I think their mental health is being affected in quite a way. Just because like the demand is so high for youngsters, for example, like their expectation is so high, you know, to do well in university, get a good job, but like it's so expensive to live here in Hong Kong, whereas like the old folks, you know, it's so expensive to live here, they can't retire, they have to keep working on like minimum wage, and it's just like forever like trying to survive almost. So yeah, this is why I think, yeah, mental health as well is like something that really needs to be included in the conversation here in Hong Kong. And actually one of the pieces we're showing in the exhibition is actually a tribute to Sinead O'Connor, who recently passed. But like just, you know, raising awareness of like, you know, people need to be heard, people need to be listened to, you know, and I just, yeah, and I think people like you, especially, like, who is a diversity and inclusion consultant, it's just amazing, because, like, it's because if we have more people like you, I feel like it will just, you know, obviously in the workplace, I feel like everyone will have, like, an understanding and, like, because everyone think, I don't know, I think I'm just talking out of my mouth now, because, like, I just feel like workplaces really need, like, a step-by-step guide and facts to really understand, like, how it works, so they can obviously incorporate it in their business, and make it really plain and simple, like, you do need to have diversity and inclusion. It's just like, there's no facts about it, like, you need to do it. And it should be second nature, you know, but unfortunately it's not for a lot of people. But as I said, you know, like, I think a lot of people nowadays do have a better understanding of, you know, diversity, inclusion in all its forms. And I just feel like, you know, people like me doing this podcast, okay, it might not reach to a lot of people, but just having that conversation, I think, is really important.
Oh, 100%. Having those conversations is essentially how we start to move forward to create those more inclusive spaces. You know, we can create action plans, we can create strategies, and they are great, but actually we need to get to the heart of people. And I think having those meaningful one-to-ones or group discussions, whether it's with our friends, our family, our loved ones, you know, co-workers, people that kind of respect us, that's how we start to get through to people about why this is so important. You know, a lot of the times people are like, oh, you know, I treat people the same, or, you know, they might not have excuses, but have their kind of idea of how the world operates. And I think when they have someone that they respect come forward and talk to them and say, hey, you know, I know that you think that you treat everyone equally, but, you know, if you think about XYZ, or this is what happened in the news recently, you know, what do you think about that? I think those are when we can start to break down barriers and actually create more inclusive workplaces. I think if we're not able to have those conversations, then people can't relate and connect with the injustices that are in society. I mean, obviously, that's not for everyone, because some people are just bad through and through, and have their preconceived notions and won't be told, you know, otherwise. But for the most part, you know, we're all human and we all want to, you know, see good in the world. And I think the best way to do that is to have these kind of conversations.
Well, no, 100%. And, you know, and that's, again, when I talk about this exhibition being true, like, you know, it is the liberating, the fact that everyone is diverse and we should all be inclusive, you know, and being kind to everyone. So that's pretty much like what my exhibition is about. And, you know, I wanted to do this podcast with you just because, you know, I hope, as I said, you know, this reaches out to audience, hopefully in Hong Kong and obviously in the UK as well. You know, this exhibition invited people from the UK, but with such a diverse background, you know, in terms of their ethnicity, their location, their, you know, everything. And it was so fun to do, you know, just to get everyone together in one place, as if, like, you know, we're all different, but at the same time, like, we're all here together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So great. I think we're coming to near the end of the podcast. And we delved into quite a lot, obviously, about diversity and inclusion, but that is something that I obviously wanted to talk about. This podcast will be on the exhibition website. It will be on Spotify soon. Not soon, it will be on Spotify now, when I upload it. It will be also at the exhibition as well. So if anyone wants to listen to it, they can. But it will be up on the internet forever. It would be taken down. But yeah, thank you so much Sarah, for joining me today. It was really nice to chat with you and to discuss something that we're both very passionate about.
Likewise, and thank you again for asking me to be involved with the exhibition itself and with your baby True. I think it's really wonderful that you've kind of got such an array of creatives and just amazing people to come forward and talk about what True means to them. And I'm just really excited for the exhibition. Just encourage everyone to get involved and take part and hear other people's stories and creative work, because there's some truly wonderful stuff there.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Even if the exhibition is over, I will never be quiet. I will always talk about diversity and I always will advocate it. And, it's always part of my art as well. And also my practice as a curator. It's always something that I always try to put into my exhibition for as a critical thinking. Just to get people aware and understand what it means to be different, but also loved. And I'm waffling now, but you know what I mean.
I do. And yeah, thank you again for having me on the podcast.
No, of
And yeah, I've
course.
enjoyed talking.
No, it was great. And yes, so Sarah has various social media platforms. Definitely check out her website, her Instagram. Is there any other social media platforms that you have?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. That's probably the best platform because I like to share a lot on there, so you get a lot more behind the scenes about what it's like to run a diversity and inclusion consultancy. And then I've got my more professional kind of mask on for LinkedIn, so do connect with me on there. And we also have a newsletter, and we send a weekly newsletter, really short, super bite-sized, digestible kind of content where we unpack a particular word. So recently we did suffering from, and trying to unpack why we shouldn't say somebody's suffering from autism or suffering from a particular disability or mental health condition, but actually saying things like has a disability, is disabled, or is living with a certain condition. And I kind of break that down in the newsletter. So it's super short, but it's really empowering for you to know, okay, this is how I talk about somebody that I may not necessarily know how to talk about in the past. But yeah, hopefully that gives you some ideas. So yeah, you can sign up via the website, or there's a link in my Instagram bio as well.
That's amazing. That's educational. If everyone reads that newsletter and then learn the terminology and understanding, the appropriate and correct way of saying things, then, that's helping the inclusion and diversity for sure. Okay, that's awesome. I'm going to link Sarah's social media and website and everything in the description so everyone can check that out. But yeah, thank you so much, Sarah, and thank you to everyone for listening, and I will see you guys next time. Bye
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to my podcast today. Make sure to share your ambition, share your art, and always share your authenticity. Until next time, bye!